I am a Game of Thrones fan. Now, I'll admit I have not read the George R.R. Martin books, and thus the purists in the congregation might question the credentials of my fandom, but I have watched every episode of the HBO series, and I wait with bated breath for next season. Game of Thrones satisfies me in numerous ways. Much of the first season was filmed on Malta, that tiny island nation with which I am obsessed. The map of Westeros intentionally mirrors the map of Great Britain, and its rival families hearken to Britain's own colorful history, with which I am also obsessed. Game of Thrones includes intrigue and dragons and wisps of magic and medieval set piece battles. I mean, what's not to like? The best part of Game of Thrones, however, is only hinted at through most of the series. It is the motto of House Stark of Winterfell, the great noble family of the North. It's also the title of the series' very first episode, first spoken from the mouth of the doomed Lord Eddard Stark, played brilliantly by Sean Bean. That motto, which hangs over the whole series like a shroud, is this: winter is coming. Winter is coming. The tone is ominous. It brings to mind the shortening of sunlight and the clouding of days. It refers to a dread, the timing of which can't be chosen and the coming of which can't be avoided, to that which is crouching but unseen, ready to strike at any moment. On the television show, the Stark family motto is often uttered in response to someone who is oblivious to what's really going on, to one who misinterprets what he's seeing, or who tells himself a false narrative in the attempt to explain reality. The motto is then mentioned as a caution to rethink things and to prepare so that when the wind begins to whip and the clouds gather, one can react. One way to characterize the entire Game of Thrones series is as a dawning recognition by all those in Westeros that the words spoken by Eddard Stark in that very first episode are, after all, true. Winter is coming. George R.R. Martin himself has acknowledged that winter in Game of Thrones is more than meteorological. Yes, it does refer to an actual literal coming blizzard on the series, but it refers equally to all those stark and difficult periods that befall each character in turn. See, in their lives, winter can come in any season. In today's gospel, Jesus and the disciples come across a blind man. According to the disciples' understanding of God and of the world, someone must be at fault for the man's disability. They're wrong, as I'll discuss in a moment. And in response to their misperception of reality, Jesus says, sounding a lot like Eddard Stark, "Night is coming. Night is coming." Jesus is surely foreshadowing the event of his passion, but he's also referring to the shadows that at times befall each of us. When sunlight shortens and the day's cloud, when something crouching in the darkness strikes at us unawares. It can be anything. Just this past week, a minivan carrying some of Jill's cousins was hit head-on while traveling for spring break, causing massive injury and casting the lives of an entire family in shadow. And there is disability. There's depression. There is addiction. There's malice. There's abuse. Any of these can occur in our personal lives. And when we consider beyond that our communities, our nation, our world, the shadows lengthen even further. Night is coming. It affects all of us sooner or later. As have people in every age, the disciples today want to make sense of it. They want to explain why. So using that man born blind as a foil, they ask Jesus, "Who sinned? This man? Or his parents?" The disciples are searching for a reason for the man's condition, for its meaning. And in the absence of an obvious explanation, they impute to the man's blindness God's punishment for sin. We seek meaning in the inexplicable too. And when purpose eludes us, we are just as likely as the disciples to presume that God is the source of our darkness. The most tragic version of this that I come across is when a child dies. And in the midst of such sorrow and pain, someone who is well-intentioned and who desperately seeks meaning in the event will offer explanations to the family like, "God needed another angel in heaven." What kind of God is that? You see, today's gospel story is about much more than a miraculous healing. It asks, what kind of God is God? And is God the source of the darkness in our lives? And it answers these questions. It is a misunderstanding of the character of God, Jesus says, to make God complicit in the darkness in our lives. God does not punish sin with blindness any more than God wills the death of children. But where then? Where is the meaning in the darkness to be found? Well, consider again what Jesus does. He approaches the blind man. He lays hands upon him and he grants him sight. Rather than cast guilt or blame on the man or his parents, and rather than participate in the disciples' attempt to make tidy and clear what is in fact random and opaque, Jesus acts to redeem something that was lost, to bring light where there was darkness. And And lest we forget, Jesus is more than a faith healer. He is the incarnation of God. And therefore, Jesus in his actions expresses God's hopes and God's passions for the world. Both the disciples and all those people in the latter half of today's story have chosen to define God as a God of punishment and as the source of the darkness that sometimes plagues us. But the reality is that God is startlingly different from people's expectations and people's prejudices. In his response to the blind man, Jesus reveals that it is not God's wish, not ever, for us to live in darkness. God always desires that we live in light, and God will act to push back the night and usher in the dawn. Today's gospel reveals two additional things of note. First, notice that Jesus initiates today's healing by grafting us into his act. Jesus says, before he heals the blind man, Jesus says, we. And that means all of us who claim to follow God. We must do the work of the one who sent me. Today, no less than then, we must all, Jesus tells us, we must all be bearers of the light. For once, John Calvin got it right when he said, quote, Christ still irradiates this world, but he now works just as hard through the ministry of his people as he once worked through his ministry of the flesh. And second, in a dramatic grammatical twist that is diluted in today's English biblical translation, when that formerly blind man is asked his identity by all those skeptical onlookers, he responds by saying, I am. And that's the same provocative way that Jesus himself identifies himself as the bearer of God's grace throughout John's gospel. In other words, having received light from Jesus, the man claims to become part of Jesus. And through him, Jesus' own light is then further extended in a darkened world. So what does this mean for you and for me? Well, it means that we don't merely come here each Sunday as supplicants seeking forgiveness or even as damaged people seeking healing. We do both of those things, and we receive both. But we also receive the light that shines in the darkness. And that's how we prepare for the night that is coming. The light lives in us. And we go back into the world carrying its flame. We live in Houston. And I'll admit that the metaphor of winter is easily lost on us. Some years, this one included, we don't experience much winter at all. But we know the darkness as well as anyone. Night is coming. Sooner or later, it always does. But recall that ancient proverb that is attributed variously from China to Celtic Ireland. I choose to light a candle rather than curse the darkness. Friends, that's gospel wisdom. God does not cause the darkness. But God does send the Christ light that makes the darkness flee. And we are part of Christ, healed and grafted to Him, and made to walk into this world and shine. Amen.